podcast, The Final Frontier.
These are the conversations of the friendship Matt Myra and Andrew Secunda.
Their continuing mission.
To seek out old adventures with contrived civilizations.
To boldly watch episodes that one of them has watched before. Oh, we're recording.
Now we're recording.
Guys, I said it immediately.
You did it. Really?
Whatever.
It's really going to change everything.
I'm okay with it. Yeah. You know, I noticed it on the...
I think you should be okay
with it.
When I
do with my wife.
I don't think it was... Wait, you'd use it with your wife?
No, on the podcast.
Oh, on the podcast.
On Matt and Dory's Excellent Adventure.
It's not a sensible thing to call her, guys.
Who keeps leaving the bridge? Like, someone's coming on, someone's coming off. The turbo lift is not that...
I was just wondering what that little ding-ding sound is.
And I decided it's the navigation system.
And I think that makes sense. It also, in the old Trek, I think that they perceived it a little bit more as a submarine situation than a ship situation.
Right.
So that's more of the sonar.
One of the best episodes is Balance of Terror.
So good.
They can't see each other, so they have to fight each other in the nebula, which they then used in Star Trek Deuce.
It may be. If not my favorite, it's definitely top five.
Episode of the original series.
Uh-huh.
Wow. That's a lot of... it's not far off. It's...
Your fixation on the minutia of, you know, the protocols and the day-to-day operations, for me, it's the military strategy that they employ.
Sure.
I'm fascinated with it. The chess game that happens in space.
All right, let's move to the 24th century.
Okay.
Ah.
Yeah.
Feels cleaner.
Yeah, feels like it has no texture. Like we're in a hotel lobby in the future.
Yeah, that's what the ship was. It was the hotel of ships.
Hi, guys.
Welcome to Star Trek The Next Conversation. I'm Matt Myra.
And I'm Andrew Secunda.
We are here... making sure everyone slogs through the first season of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Guys, don't fall down on the job. I'm going through it. You have to, too.
Don't let Andy down. Someone has to go through this with him. And boy, was it an episode this week.
Really? Really? I mean, we're both professional writers. We both know the difficulty of a first season.
Mm-hmm.
And so we shouldn't be that critical. This was a giant steaming turd, this episode.
I mean, conceptually, it's an interesting premise.
I think that's part of the problem.
Yeah, they,
like it's just attached to the fact that he's getting younger is attached to this episode, and it has nothing to do with the plot of the episode.
Also, I think that we'll get into it. I'll talk about the cold open and everything. But you guys asked for it, and we're delivering ambient noise throughout the episode.
Yeah, people really love it.
But I think we're going to get off the bridge and go over to the quarters, because I find all the beeping to be a little too distracting.
See, I feel like there should be activity.
Like, I think if we were recording a podcast on the Enterprise,
uh-huh.
we wouldn't do it on the bridge.
Right.
I'd be like, well, there's too much going on here.
Right.
Plus, Picard doesn't love it when we record podcasts up here. Why don't we just go to my quarters?
We need a poster with us recording a podcast at the side of Picard and him just being like, what is going on? Are they ambassadors? See, I think I'm going to fall asleep with it. Oh, by the way.
Yeah. Still doing it?
Every night.
That's great, right?
I go down for like 10 hours.
it's a special thing. And you know what's funny is even when I was flying last week, I put it on.
Yeah.
Not that a plane sounds unlike
right,
this.
It's true.
But what I liked about it was I could put my noise canceling headphones on,
sure.
and then pumped in Starship sounds.
It's great.
Because that,
and then you have the vibration.
Yeah, and the sound, you know, on a plane, I feel like sometimes people are yapping and I don't like hearing the cart go by, so
yeah.
I just was in my own little world.
It's so great. It really is so comforting. That it's like, oh, I'm going to go on a ride while I sleep.
Yeah.
I'm going to pretend.
It is great.
Can I ask you not to pick it apart? Although we do that with everything
else. That's
what
we do.
So,
I think it's issues with your father.
That's why?
Yeah.
Interesting. Because he did it? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm just... you said not to pick it apart, and usually that's the answer to don't pick this apart, but...
Okay. But is it bullshit, the sound?
What do you mean?
Well, it's like, basically, it's sort of duplicating kind of a submarine sound of it kind of going through the water, I think. Or at least the engine sound. Is that what this is? Like, what is this sound?
What are we hearing?
Yes.
I think we're hearing matter and antimatter being pumped to the nacelles.
Would it make that sound?
Yeah.
All right.
It's humming along. We're hearing inertial dampeners. We're hearing artificial gravity. We're hearing... so many systems going.
My other question is, it said idling on the one that I'm using. I don't know if that's what it says on yours. Does that mean it's still the Enterprise?
Idling for an Enterprise situation, I just think subwarp impulse speeds.
Subwarp, I gotcha.
You know, I think it sounds different when your thrusters are on. I think it sounds different when you're traveling at warp.
Gotcha. I prefer to think of us in motion. That's certainly easier for...
You're not like... orbiting.
Right.
Plus, I don't think the Enterprise idles too often. Unless it's standing...
It really doesn't.
Unless it's, like, facing another ship and, you know, then it's a whole thing.
Sure.
So, Andy.
Yes, Matthew.
Have we come to a conclusion of when the emails are going?
I think that there's been a lot of debate back and forth amongst us. On the internet.
Yep.
The poll came out clearly saying, well, not clearly, but, you know, at least 60% saying keep it at the beginning.
Uh-huh.
Matt and I both had the impulse of it does seem to slow it down a little bit.
I agree.
However, the counter thought was...
it goes with the previous episode.
You listen to the previous episode, and then if you haven't heard this episode, then you go right in and you can hear a few extra thoughts. So that's reasonable, too. So what you made the command decision about this week is we put it at the end for this episode, and then we'll do a poll.
And then after that, people are going to tell us which they liked better.
So we're going to do a poll, I guess, on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Pipe in. You do your ats and commentaries and let us know how you're feeling.
Pipe in and pipe up, guys. We want to hear
out
from you, the fans.
On the internet.
The 8 or 9 of you that listen to this show.
Yeah. Let's hear from all 8 of you.
Okay. So that being said, then.
You know what we forgot?
What did we forget to do?
You didn't tell me what day in history it was, so we don't know what.
Oh, I haven't started yet.
Okay. All right. Well, let's start with this. Matt, would you watch this episode? Would you advise them to watch this episode? I think I know the answer to this.
If you're numb.
Mm-hmm.
And you just want to feel again.
Yeah.
Maybe watch it because you'll just feel anger. it'll be something. It's easier than cutting yourself.
Sure.
So that's my answer.
Right.
If you're even keeled, I would say don't bother.
Don't bother. Yeah. This is one to put.
It's one to be ejected out of an airlock into the nether regions of space.
Yeah.
So the episode is too short a season, ironically, because I thought it was too long an episode.
Oh, sure.
It aired February 8th, 1988. Stardate 41309.5. Andy, what was going on?
All right. What's the date again?
February the 8th, 1988.
1988.
Bless me.
Zundheit.
Thank you.
Okay, so that one, it still could have been by Tiffany.
Oh, God.
Sorry.
Guys, we're not going to play Could Have Been because I could have been.
Do you want to play a different Phil Collins song? how about I Should Be So Lucky by Kylie Minogue in the UK.
What's number two?
Number two, it doesn't give me those.
Oh, I see.
By the way, someone had was very nice enough to send in a bunch of other news stories. If you want to send that
that's cool.
To me, or you want to point me toward a website that I can pull it up pretty fast every week, because, guys, we both got other stuff. Well, you know, we're doing a lot of stuff here.
Well, I mean, you know, Some have more things than others.
Look, you've chosen to do 9 podcasts, not on me.
So,
what are you going to play?
Kylie Minogue. I should be so lucky. Let's hear what the UK was
doing. I remember enjoying this one.
I don't know how loud.
You know what?
It's very poppy.
Yeah. You know what's funny is I think I had She's So Lucky. The Britney Spears song in my head. Yeah.
Sounds like I'm walking down the corridor of the Enterprise and someone's quarters is playing this too loud.
That would be amazing. What is Data experimenting with in human nature now?
Dance. Just dance.
Okay, the U.S. president was Ronald Reagan, of course. I Should Be So Lucky in the UK. Stand and Deliver, starring Edward James Olmos.
Battlestar's Own.
Battlestar's Own was the number one. And The Bonfire of the Vanities by Tom Wolfe, still one of the best-selling books. That has to hang in for a long time. I do remember the song, and I enjoyed it. Kylie Minogue was cute as a button. Is cute as a button,
still
I'm
is.
Sure.
She's
probably younger than me. Can't see it, but we're bopping our heads. We can't help it.
Yeah, there's some songs that are just meant to be moved to. And all of Kylie Minogue's are that. Okay, I'm going to take this down a notch here.
It's very loud. I feel like we have a very loud episode so far.
We do.
Trying to wake everybody
pull down
up.
The ambient noise there.
Yeah.
Oh, that's too far. Too far. We're okay there.
Okay.
All right, Andy. So, the episode is too short a season.
Yeah.
Really? It was.
This season seems endless to me,
there
Matt.
There you go. Directed by Rob Bowman.
Yeah. What's going on with Bowman in this episode?
I think he's
very talented. He's a talented individual, and this one is...
I think, as we know, from television.
Right.
TV directors don't have a ton to do with what you're seeing.
That's true. That's true. I will say, though,
I'm working week 12.
Right.
And 13 or whatever. It wouldn't work back to back, but I'm working week 12. Let's see what they give me. Oh, okay.
Yes. No, I don't blame him for the plot. I think there's some weird.
There's some handhelds.
Directorial. Yeah.
I got to say, I liked seeing Picard come out of the turbo lift. Like
see,
that.
I was going to say, I thought it was weird. The scene is over and he goes. And then he says, all right, I got to go down to sick bay. And then there's a handheld shot of him walking into the turbo lift.
You
and
got
he goes,
a
sick bay.
Him. You got a minute alone
like,
with him.
Why are we following? Why did we do a special handheld shot for that?
All right. So directed by Rob Bowman. Teleplay by Michael McKellian and DC Fontana, the great DC Fontana. Story by Michael McKellian. This is Too Short a Season. And I will summarize the plot as quickly as possible. A hostage situation on Morden 4 brings the Enterprise and Admiral Mark Jameson, who successfully negotiated a peace there 40 years earlier, back for another case. Unknown to Starfleet and Federation historians, Jameson actually appeased the planet leader, Karnas, with arms for his hostages, but kept the prime directive by supplying all his enemies, thus sparking 4 decades of civil war. Now, in the previous sentence, I said that he negotiated a peace 40 years earlier. And this next sentence says that it plunged them into 40 years of civil war. Karnas doesn't need Jameson to negotiate on behalf of hostages now. The invitation is just a ruse to get him to there so the governor can exact his revenge. But the wheelchair-bound admiral has another surprise, which he's kept secret from his wife, Anne. Another planet, grateful for Jameson's diplomacy, has revealed their de-aging compound to him, and he has been using it. His youthfulness startles his wife and the crew until the overdoses start to backfire. His body can't take the strain. Meanwhile, Picard arrives at Morden and confronts Karnas with the truth, but the leader wants Jameson and doesn't believe the young man he sees before him is his enemy from so long ago. Only Jameson's display of their blood-cut scar convinces him, convinces and amazes Karnas, But by now, even vengeance is futile. The governor allows Jameson to die as his wife watches, and the admiral is buried on Morden IV at her request. Yeah. Oh,
by the way, even
goodness,
even get to that point, they was a, no, he'll be buried on this planet.
Why? What,
you want the guy who started 40 years of civil war buried on your planet?
It's crazy.
This is where he was happiest, where he was starting 40 years of bloody civil war.
It's one of many things in this episode that are nonsensical.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was going to say, let's kick it off with Captain Picard's Captain's Log.
All righty.
Captain's Log, Stardate 41309.5. We are in orbit around Persephone 5, where I have been sent to confer with Admiral Mark Jameson in regard to an extraordinary situation.
There you go. Oh, someone's using the replicator.
Nice.
So
at the beginning, yeah,
the cold open is so weird in this episode.
Very weird.
It's stuttered. This is essentially what we open with. We open with that Captain's Log and then Karnas.
I am Karnas, governor of Morden IV. A dissident group of terrorists have taken Federation Ambassador Hawkins and his staff hostage. They will not discuss terms with me. This is a crisis I cannot resolve. The terrorists are demanding a Federation negotiator. I feel there is only one negotiator with the skills to resolve the situation. The lives of the hostages will depend on Starfleet delivering this man to Morden. Commander Mark Jameson. Admiral Jameson. The terrorists have given you 6 Earth days to bring him here, or the hostages will die.
Guys, I fell asleep there.
I keep wanting to sort of jump to the end to address all of the writing issues. Number one is this guy, by the end of the episode, it's revealed that this guy has just taken hostages himself.
Right.
And there is no transition between the moment of him saying, the dissidents have taken the hostages, and I'll kill the hostages. There's no moment where everyone's like, but you said before,
right.
So why are we here? Do we have a treaty with you? What's going on?
It's so... Ugh. It's like an afterthought.
Yeah.
You know, the original story... I can read a little bit about that if you care to hear that information.
Sure, I'd be curious.
Michael McKellen's original story used the reverse aging device to deal with the issue of male menopause.
Uh-huh.
In that version, Jameson helps Governor Zepik and his rival, the High Priest, sit down to peace talks and does not die at the end. Instead, he regresses to the age of 14 and loses all memory of his wife.
Kind of felt like that's where it was going.
Uh-huh. Fontana tightened up the terrorism trap as a dramatic story to lure, dramatic story's lore, and had Jameson die for having tampered with nature. Rob Bowman, the director, remembered being excited about working on weekends with actor Clayton Rohner to build up the character of Jameson, but otherwise he recalled the show as a sit-and-tell script. That was long with dialogue. Other problems with this episode included subpar makeup.
Oh, man, is it. I remember that I said aloud as soon as he appeared on the screen.
I was like,
oh, no.
Oh, we have to deal with that the whole time?
More like too short in the makeup chair.
Hi-oh. The subpar makeup look for the aged Admiral Jameson and a malfunctioning $10,000 wheelchair.
That was $10,000, that fucking piece of junk. Was it supposed to roll around automatically?
I don't know what it was supposed to do. Michael Pataki had previously played another K role on the original series.
All the wheelchairs in the future are massive.
I feel like they're doing other things. Like, right. Like I feel like they're
they
like
be like hover chairs. Or
I think you
shit?
Can like poop and pee in there.
I see.
And I think they're like
maybe giving you a little bit
who
of
knows
a massage something.
Yeah. Yeah. All kinds of things are happening right.
Ooh,
down there.
A massage wheelchair, Matt. That's our idea.
Get on it. Although it's not going to really do well for people who have no feeling below their waist.
I guess that's true. All right. Retracting it.
Okay.
Oh, no, I've already invested $100,000.
Oh, no, it only cost $10,000. Now, this reference is... I'm reading again from Star Trek Next Generation Companion, the revised edition.
All right.
Referring to Michael Pataki, who was the antagonist of the episode, he played he played Koloth.
Right.
Koloth's aide that taunts Scotty and Chekov in The Trouble with Tribbles.
I'll tell you.
Should be hauled away as garbage.
I have that clip if you'd like to hear it.
I've heard it 1,000 times. Play it again. Let me get this.
No, I want to hear Scotty's setup to it.
Laddie, don't you think you should rephrase that?
You're right.
He's kind of doing the same accent.
I didn't mean to say that the Enterprise should be hauling garbage. I meant to say that it should be hauled away as garbage.
He did it. By the way, I rewatched this scene then.
Uh-huh.
It is a long, awesome fight scene.
Oh, it's great.
That episode is so good.
Have you ever seen Trials and Tribulations?
No, I never saw the... I know that they did. They went back.
So good.
I really got to see that. But
it's
I will also...
So good.
Before we get off this, Michael Pataki... is that his name, Michael Pataki?
I just read it. Yes, Pataki. Michael Pataki.
Also from the 80s, in addition to being many... I'm trying to get a list of his credits, but I can't find it now. But the one that I remember the most was this memorable character from Rocky IV...
So the result's quite obvious.
And what results are those?
Whatever he hits, he destroys.
I was like, as soon as I saw him, I was like, oh, I know this guy from somewhere. And that was where I knew him from.
Other trivia from Star Trek The Next Generation Companion book. Whew. Multiple. Show marks the first appearance of a Starfleet Admiral in TNG and of his duty uniform, which would eventually be redesigned thrice more. Little used here is a miniature of the Morden City built by Okuda and Sternbach, the last such model used in favor of matte paintings until season 6. Note the wall behind Camus's desk is lined with old-style phasers from the 60s and Trek movie eras.
Oh, cool.
The portal to Khan's staff style... The portal's to Khan's style staff from The Last Outpost also hangs here.
Neat. And
so many words.
Clayton Rohner. Uh-huh. I did a little deep dive on him. He who plays the Admiral Jameson.
Mm-hmm.
And I gotta say... okay, fine. You know, it's not on him that the makeup looks like somebody just threw paper mache at his face 10 seconds before he went on.
Oatmeal.
Fair enough. Yeah, more oatmeal. And that, by the way, the when you're making this kind of intense, you know, makeup effect for television, you don't have all the time in the makeup chair or in preparation as you do in movies. So... I don't really, you know, it's just sort of like they should have seen the test of this and gone, okay, we got to figure out something else. So that's A, but I don't put that on the makeup gentleman, whoever that was. I think Matt's maybe looking it up.
No, I'm not.
Oh, he's not. He's not at all. So you can look it up at home. It'll be a fun little game for you. Or not fun game. So that's not on him, but this performance as Admiral Jameson as an old person is like a high school play version. It's like he's like playing a Muppet version of an old person.
He's like the in Kimmy Schmidt, the second season of Kimmy Schmidt. They have this guy's Titus's boyfriend's grandmother is a puppet. Just an elderly puppet.
It's amazing.
So they just had like that's what he's doing.
That is exactly what he's doing.
It's
terrible.
Awful.
However, he does. I would say as soon. The other thing is,
once he can use his real voice, three acts into the fucking show?
Yeah.
Well, actually,
yeah, he's okay when he does it then. But just on the deep dive on Clayton Rohner, I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly as I'm critiquing your performance. But mostly I remember him.
He's not listening.
As the handsome guy from Just One of the Guys.
Uh-huh. Oh, right.
He was also an Angel, X-Files, L.A. Law, T.J. Hooker, Hill Street Blues, Miami Vice, Beverly Hills 90210, and... Matt, you will be interested to know, The Human Centipede 3.
Oh.
So the guy's still working.
Let's hear a little bit of that voice.
Okay.
Oh, sorry, everybody.
Available.
Still alive, you mean?
So far as he knew, sir, you could have been dead.
Quite right, Commander. But I am not. And I imagine Ambassador Hawkins has told him that. I briefed the Ambassador about Mordan before he left to take up residence.
All right, Karnas has a problem he thinks you can resolve. What do the terrorists need that Karnas can't or won't give them?
Morton has had peace for 5 years. They have finally come to a state of productivity which satisfies their planetary needs, but no more than that. Perhaps the dissidents feel the Federation could provide them with more.
I have negotiated many treaties on many planets, Picard. I have found that peace, or the appearance of it, is often a prelude to war.
Admiral.
All this stuff is so pointless.
It really does make me, like, wonder what, let's bring it down to there. Yeah, that's it. That's the level I want.
Oh, by the way, I think you also enjoy the diplomacy side of it. This would have been an amazing episode.
I don't.
This episode. I'm just saying in general. Or right. Do you not enjoy
That's
it in
not
general?
My favorite not thing about Star Trek,
okay,
no.
Fair enough. Then I just made that up. But whatever the case, this would have been a perfect episode. I mean, we're practically dealing with a similar
like
situation in Syria at the moment in terms of, obviously.
I'd rather have Admiral Jameson running the country. He seems to have more of his wits about him.
But anyway, my point is it could have been an interesting diplomatic episode, and they just sort of like, that's just a vehicle to get to this aging thing, and neither adds to either. They throw out the diplomacy thing at the end because the guy is faking the whole hostage situation.
Right. Yeah, so you don't even get to see any of that.
Yeah.
But my problem with people acting old... Your voice doesn't do that.
Yeah.
When you get old, it gets maybe a hair deeper, maybe right. A little gravelier,
mm-hmm.
But that's about it. Like yeah. You look at like James Earl Jones, for instance.
Right.
Morgan Freeman.
Well, you know what? Even more to the point, he's playing against an actress supposedly around his own age, Marsha Hunt, who is doing none of the things he is doing. So you could have just—I mean, she must have been on a set and been like, "What is this guy doing?"
Could have been like, "This is offensive."
Yeah, this is horrible. I don't even know how to play against this person. By the way, Marsha Hunt's still alive. I think 99.
Marsha. I mean, let's take a look at this, everyone. $10,000 wheelchair. There's a lot going on, Andy. It's got many lights.
It's a crazy thing.
I do like the aesthetic of it. It seems like it's very like Starfleet issue wheelchair situation. It's got the same brown leather as the Enterprise chairs, the same wood accent as the tactical station, and it's got upwards of 6 running lights.
It's insanity.
It's really spectacular, and I cannot believe it cost $10,000. And also the door in the middle, which I love. They spent $10,000 on this, right? The door opens up in the middle.
Yeah.
Kids, you can go to memoryalpha.wikia.com and take a look at this particular picture I'm looking at, or just grab a still frame of it. The door doesn't even close straight.
Oh my gosh, you're right. Wow. I wonder if the props guys took a beating on this.
I honestly think it's a great looking
I bet
Star
you that
Trek
was one
wheelchair.
Of the things that they farmed out. Sometimes something will be too complicated. They'll go, all right, just have this other company do it. And then it comes back and it's just like, what the hell is this?
I mean, it looks... it's akin to the Pike chair.
That was what I was thinking. You know? Yes, absolutely. It's like a half pike.
Yeah, it's a half pike. Okay, so what else is there to say about this episode? Well, honestly, I think that's it. Thanks for coming by this week, everybody.
It would have been fine.
Honestly, it's such a...
There's this. I think you might be past this, but I thought this was a funny moment. Oh.
So, Jameson, I see time has not been kind.
I just thought it was funny that that's this opening thing. He's asking for this guy's help.
Time got you.
You do not look good. It's like kind of a dick move.
What about when he gets all hot and heavy with his lady?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
I'm sure.
Oh, wait. That's not it. I meant to play this scene.
It's working, Annie.
Oh, darling!
I wish she had kissed that oatmeal.
I thought she was acting like...
I needed to get back in space again.
You know, that's the only time I can get erect.
You are looking much better.
It's the new treatment.
No. Eva, come here.
I hope you're heading for the bedroom.
You stop it. Darling.
Oh.
Like you looked 20 years ago.
You flatter me.
Now you tell me what the hell is going on.
I don't know.
You flatter me.
I was thinking that the actress was like, it's inappropriate for me to kiss this younger guy, but I think you're 100% right. She was like, do I got to put my mouth on that stuff, on that oatmeal you just threw on him?
So let's hear this weird exchange between Picard and Crusher.
I was just about to go
Crusher.
Go for it.
All the medical information the Admiral provided is satisfactory, sir.
Excellent, Doctor.
Except for one thing. The test results he gave me aren't 2 days old, they're 2 months old. The medical records coder always includes the date as part of the file number. He lied to me, sir, and I don't know why.
I don't know why.
He is 85 years old, Doctor. For some, the memory begins to fail.
He suffers from Iverson's disease, sir, that affects the body, not the mind. Now, I have a gut feeling he's hiding something.
Well, that is an observation I would expect from Counselor Troy.
Now, who is he insulting here?
Right.
Both of them?
It seems like it. Beverly certainly acts like all snitty about it. She does not like that. But it's definitely like, that's the kind of bullshit analysis I'll hear from Deanna.
Doctor, I do respect your opinion, and...
It's just that you're a woman.
I want you on the bridge for the next day or so. The Admiral must remain in the best of health for these negotiations.
Listen to that music.
And he might require your...
Weird,
service.
Right? Synth.
It's very apparent in this episode.
Oh, this is a scene we're going to get a much better look at the wheelchair.
Would you like to take the corner?
By the way, in that last scene, though, it really feels like he insults her, and then he's like, you know what? Come on, don't be like that, baby. Come on to the bridge. You be on the bridge.
It's like, oh, you know, would you like to go on the bridge? I'm sorry. I buy you this handbag.
What number are you up to there?
What number?
What... Time code
12 or so.
Very good.
What about you?
I could be at... This is another
I'm
scene.
I'm thrilled to move forward.
All right, very good. I could be at another scene. See, I don't... This is my... I don't know. I have a theory that is...
Oh.
That is really...
Well, you tell me what time around your theory is, and you can get your music ready, and I'll jump over there.
I have everything.
We'll split.
I have everything already
ready. Ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
You've heard. Andy has everything ready. It's going to be a flawless production.
Where are all the bathrooms at?
I thought I was going to blow it, didn't you?
Still time.
There sure is.
Just pretending to be so dim. No one knows the answers. Least of all him, it's Andy's theory.
We already heard a little bit of a snippet in that last scene about where Beverly is just like, I just can't figure it out.
Yeah.
And so here's some more.
Oh, but he even looks younger. And Captain, there are absolutely no traces of Iverson's disease.
You said there was no cure for Iverson's.
None that we know of. Well, whatever these substances are doing to his body, at least they've done that for him. But how? It's too early to say.
Get me some answers, Doctor. As soon as possible.
Yes, sir.
She never knows what's going on. She has a learning disability. And I know it's a continuation of my theory, but it's hard to think about anything else. When every episode, it's just an affirmation of everything I've thought before, and I can.
Do you think that maybe she can't think straight because her son's a psychopath?
Well, you're going the other way. Of course, obviously, I've thought that Wesley is manipulating the fact that she has a learning disability. But maybe you're right. Maybe she's upset that she knows the truth about Wesley, and she can't think about anything else because she never knows at what moment Wesley will try and destroy the whole ship. And at the very end, you have this scene.
Mm-hmm.
Will he nail it?
He's doing it.
Such pain.
The compound he took is forcing the cells and organs to go further, younger, and they can't take the stress. It's like they're imploding. And I can't give him anything to stop it.
Can you ease the pain?
She shakes her head. She can't give him anything. I can't do anything to stop it. Can you ease the pain? Can you give him any of our 24th century things to stop him from feeling this? No.
In Beverly Crusher's defense, I'm sure that your organs shrinking and imploding probably is more painful than any...
I don't dispute that, but there's got to be something where you can shut off the
you could probably
the neural
sever
response
his spinal cord.
I think it's got to be so. Whatever the case, if it wasn't part of a pattern, I would say, oh, this is an episode where she couldn't figure it out,
yeah,
or where she took too long to figure it out. It's every episode she has a learning disability. What learning disability does she have? You know, I don't know. It's probably some ADD, ADHD. It's probably some dyslexia. It's probably some dyscalculia,
mm-hmm.
Which is a person's ability to understand numbers and learn math facts.
We know.
But whatever it is, she's got some problems. And somebody should help her on the ship because she's in charge of everyone's health.
Well,
Andy's theories. He did it. He's really smart.
Bam!
A flawless segment by Andy, everybody. I can't believe what I just witnessed.
Don't get used to it, folks.
Andy's theories played perfectly by Andy.
Wow. Really excited. It's almost like we're a real podcast.
No, that's never going to happen. So, what's the main thrust of this episode?
That's part of the problem. I can go to a clip for that too.
Please.
Well, it's at the very end. It's their summation of
mm-hmm.
of what the whole thing is about. 43, sorry. This is the after everything's been resolved, the interaction between Picard and Riker. Really summing up the theme in a very old-school Trek way.
And by the permission of Karnas, the quest for youth, number one, so futile. Age and wisdom have their graces, too.
I wonder if one doesn't have to have age and wisdom to appreciate that, sir.
I hope not, number one. Mr. LaForge, prepare to take us out of orbit. Set course for ISIS 3.
ISIS?
Oh, no.
Leaving orbit.
And by the way, at that last shot, another weird, pan, kind of a tracking shot across Geordi to see Data, who's kind of looking at Geordi like, yep, we really are going to warp. And it's like, what is that shot for? It's a lot of weird, extraneous shots. But my point about the theme is, what does that have to do with anything that happened. The guy chose to overdose on some youth drug while he was going to this planet for no apparent reason. He could have negotiated this treaty. And by the way, it's called out like twice by Picard.
Yeah. It's a mess. We got a fun message from John Cooley while we're recording.
Ooh, exciting.
Renovos' own. He says, too short a season in which an aging and vain admiral dons a powerful, terrible weapon, his own uniform. Beautifully done.
That is beautifully done.
Thank you, John. Okay, so more on the point. So there's two sort of thrusts here. You have this admiral trying to make himself younger. Is it like a moral? Is it a morality tale?
I mean, it's clearly.
But what is the morality?
Right. It's clearly a. It's the vehicle actually is a perfect Star Trek episode vehicle of a guy who used to be powerful and is still an admiral and still has all this this weight in Starfleet, but is decrepit and dying, and he makes himself young again. The problem is his motivation for making himself young again is always a little unclear, other than a general. That's Matt.
That's actually John.
Oh, there you go. Did he write again?
He said, I'm normally a huge fan of William Ware Thies, who designed the original the uniforms for both the original series and the first season of TNG, but I've always wondered if he had a stroke while designing Admiral Jameson's uniform.
Is it just because it looks kind of crappy?
It's a weird uniform, and there are so many versions of the Starfleet Admiral uniform.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was just thinking in my head about how this guy acts as an old person.
Yeah.
And I was thinking to myself, well, I mean, are there any examples in Star Trek that I could pull that deal with this particular instance of acting?
Mm-hmm.
And there certainly are. So in the original series,
Kirk gets
super old.
Yeah.
But in this very series, Star Trek The Next Generation, we have the scene with Dr. McCoy.
Right.
Who is now Admiral McCoy at 120 some odd years old.
Right.
I'm going to try to find the scene so we can hear how.
By the way, another weird side note, Karnas refers to the Admiral as like, well, he was older. He was at least 80 years old.
Right.
And it's like, but McCoy's 120 and he's still fucking walking around and everything's fine.
Yeah.
So what are we talking about?
I think they should have honestly, just as a fact of the script and how Star Trek 24th century medicine is, they should have allowed or should have written him as being 110 or something like that. Or
minimally.
Yeah.
Although, maybe older.
Although we don't know what Iverson's disease does to
That's
an
true.
80 some odd year old
That's
person.
Fair enough. But then Karna still wouldn't be referring to he's, you know, in his 80s as though it's this astonishing thing.
Yeah. I just wanted to find this Dr. McCoy scene, and I think it might be the very last scene.
No, it's not the last scene. I think it's at the in the midpoint of the show.
Oh, so it's like I'm gonna find. Oh, mm-hmm. Found it.
All right.
Andy's right, guys. It's at the midpoint of the show. It's at the end of the first hour.
Uh-huh.
So he's right.
I feel like
because it's a two-parter.
I wonder if there was a programming reason for that. That you open up with McCoy, or you close with McCoy.
I think it's probably. Because it was written as, you know, 2 half hours. They were like, let's just end the first half hour with this sweet cameo.
Right.
You got some reason you want my atoms scattered all over space, boy?
No, sir. But at your age, sir, I thought you shouldn't have to put up with the time and trouble of a shuttlecraft.
Hold it right there, boy.
Sir?
What about my age?
Sorry, sir. If that subject troubles you.
Troubles me? What's so damn troublesome about not having died?
This is great.
What do you think I am anyway?
137 years, Admiral, according to Starfleet records.
Explain how you remember that so exactly.
I remember every fact I'm exposed to, sir.
I wish I had that.
I don't see no points on your ears, boy. But you sound like a Vulcan.
No, sir. I'm an android.
almost as bad.
So it gets a little silly.
I did want to hear him say the last line because it's so great.
Advanced and most honorable race.
They are. Damn annoying at times.
Yes, sir.
Well, it's a new ship, but she's got the right name. Now, you remember that, you hear?
I will, sir.
You treat her like a lady. And she'll always bring you home.
Until you blow her up.
Just thinking. A delightful scene. You know, a lot of silliness with him not knowing what an android is, but...
No, he didn't know that Data was an android. It's not that he knew what an android was. He just didn't... All right.
I'd accept that.
Oh, you'll accept that?
I'll accept it.
Let's hear some more old talking. This is now, just to juxtapose it...
Failure of his own efforts to negotiate. He is a proud man.
That could be... Karnas has established himself as a powerful man on Mordan. Suddenly, in this situation, his power is useless.
Sick Beta Bridge, I'm ready for Admiral Jamin.
Resolve. What do the terrorists need?
Sorry.
Karnas,
let's just hear him talk again.
I won't give them.
Morton's
oh, no. Data's
years.
Talking now?
They have finally come to a state of productivity which satisfies their planetary needs. But no more than that. Perhaps the dissidents feel the Federation could provide them with more.
I have negotiated many treaties on many planets, Picard. I have found that peace, or the appearance of it, is often a prelude to war.
It's also, people didn't talk like him. It's sort of like, well, that's the way an old person would talk. But the people didn't talk like him in the original series. And so.
No.
At least he keeps the accent when he's younger.
Does he?
Yeah, I think he...
Let's listen to him, shall we?
I want to save lives, Captain.
Noble sentiments. But that's too easy an answer. You've been here before. You negotiated a release of the hostages with Karnas before. Why is it now your answer is an armed raid? It's my away team you're sending in there. I think there's something you're not telling me, and I have a right to know what it is.
Do you know the background? The Mordenites had some sophistication, but were still ruled by family tribal units. Karnas's father was the ruling chief of one of the families in other tribes.
See, I feel like he gets a little bit more grounded as soon as the makeup's off.
Oh, absolutely, which makes the makeup thing so crazy.
It's so crazy, and it is. The clip you showed of McCoy really does highlight, like, you know, DeForest Kelly makes the one eccentric choice, which happens with many Southerners when they get older. It's like, fuck it, I'm going to have my Southern accent.
Oh, he's just...
Totally reasonable. And the rest of it's just like, he's just playing an old person. He's not playing a freaking... Jim Henson creation.
I think that it's so telling of just like how, I don't know if it's like underdirected or
it's overdirected, because over-directed. Rob Bowman said
you're working with him over weekends. Worked,
and that was the one thing.
What if he was working with him over weekends to try to get him to stop?
Based on the rest of Mr. Bowman's fine work, I would have to give that theory some credence.
Rob Bowman, I'm here to support you.
Clayton Rohner, I will say he's fine in the rest of the episode. He's done other fine work, but the I would also say I don't know.
What don't you know?
Nothing. I just, the fact that he was sitting in Rob Bowman's apartment, just like, no. Do more lips. Do more, like, you're just trying to push some mush out of your mouth as you're talking. Do that. Like, we're just there excitedly helping you. He says that's the part he enjoyed about this episode the most.
I just want to hear, juxtapose it. I want to hear McCoy at his peak.
Okay.
I can't leave Spock at this time.
You just indicated you could. They're Klingons here. If their mission is a legitimate research interest in the planet's organic potential, then you're the one man who can tell me.
And if that's not it?
Then I need help. Advice I can trust as much as Spock's.
I appreciate the compliment, Jim, but...
Bones, I'm as worried about Spock as you are. But if the Klingons are breaking the treaty, could be interstellar war. Check the bridge.
Bridge.
I'm sorry.
You coming with me?
What's happening?
Do I have a choice?
I love the fucking music sticks.
The music's amazing.
Emergency, come in. Enterprise, come in. McCoy, emergency.
They left. Out of orbit.
Anyway. Just having fun.
You sure are.
DeForest Kelly.
I have another scene. Of. Oh, I love him too. So great. And interestingly, a very subtly played scene between William Shatner and DeForest Kelly.
I will say also, while we're in the business of talking Star Trek, Carl Urban does a fantastic job playing Dr. Leonard McCoy in Star Trek, the 2009
movies. Oh, I would agree. Yeah.
Yeah,
just enough of an impression where you can still keep it grounded.
Oh, he's great.
Yeah,
he's great. Again, if you haven't seen Star Trek Beyond, Matt recommends it.
All right, I had another scene in the middle. It's not really related to the other stuff, but I thought I noted it.
Go ahead, because I cannot stand this episode.
That's true. He still cares for you, despite the physical changes.
Wait a minute, I think I got to go back a little bit more.
Okay, no problem here.
There's the only option.
You don't agree.
With respect, Admiral.
That's not this.
No one else has heard or considered.
Nope.
Of the away team.
Oh, I'm trying to find it.
Andy's previous luck of nailing it has faded.
Guys.
Oh, he says guys too. Why don't you get mad at him?
Anniversary's
next. In his heart, he's still the same man you married, Anne. That's true. He still cares for you, despite the physical changes he's undergoing. But he's getting younger. And I'm... Well, look at me.
I don't have any papier-mâché on me.
Why did he do this? Because there are lives at stake, Mrs. Jameson. Well, what about our lives, his and mine? I was looking forward to time together, finally. Our retirement. Now he's young again and has his life to live over. Doctor, she has to know. Know what? Anne, your husband.
What is it?
He's not stabilizing. He may not have that life to live over.
Such a weird scene. And everybody's acting like a dick in this scene. even if you accept all the bullshit plot of he's going to rescue hostages, but he's young now. What are we going to have in common? Oh, it's just like, what? You know, you've been an admiral's wife for 50 years. Come on. Fuck up a little bit.
Well, I think that's not fair to her and her feelings.
I think it's totally fair. I think if you've been an admiral's wife.
Plus, I think she's also like.
She's dealt with a lot of other crap besides this.
I think
this.
She's currently worried about her husband going crazy.
She's not saying that. She's worried about the fact that he's younger than him or her. Mm.
Well,
that's what I say.
I say that this episode is still not great. So. What else is there really to cover here? There's so much talking in this episode. It is crazy.
I will play you.
I do like this line.
Okay.
Their phasers are set on kill. Thank you, Mr. Data. I have heard the sound before.
I was about to play that because that is virtually the only thing I enjoyed in this episode, that they're in a firefight.
Uh-huh.
Data does a roll over to Picard just to tell him that it's that they're on set on kill, and then you see Picard in battle and he's cool the way he should be because that guy's seen everything. And he's just like, yeah, I know they're on kill. I've heard it before. I've been here before.
Admiral, your proper place is on the bridge.
I will remind you one more time, Picard. I am the senior mission commander, and I am leading this team.
Sir? The Admiral is correct, number one. He has that right.
Ooh.
But I am the captain of the ship, and I have a right to accompany him.
Trigger, command of the Enterprise. Energize!
I know that's how it works, sir. Have a good time.
And on your note of pointless, like everything taking so long. They go down. The guy's seen Jameson, and then he gets sick, and there's this long thing.
Have Mrs. Jameson prepare to beam down. Karnas, I asked Dr. Crush to bring with her the visual records we made of the Admiral's deterioration. Will you look at them?
You're wasting my time, Picard.
And the audiences.
You saw the Admiral on the Enterprise when he was en route for Mordor?
Yes.
And you recognized him?
Yes.
Is this the man you saw?
It's a picture of a person.
This is the man I want.
He's here, Karnas. Look.
It's a picture of him with slightly less horrible makeup.
I don't know if it's slightly less horrible.
And now it's a picture of him with no makeup. That proves it.
Once he took
less and less horrible makeup.
Stop it.
And by the way, why beam the wife down? I understand that he's dying, but this guy may kill everybody at any moment.
Well, that's probably her wish.
And I could play another clip where it's the other guy from Rocky IV saying, Pataki saying, it is you. Somehow it is you. And there's a long thing where he shows him the scar and it's just endless. Why? Why? It's just why would he believe that he was younger?
Yeah.
What does it have to do with the theme of him getting younger?
I don't know.
What does it have to do with the plot of the hostages?
Again, nothing.
The whole thing drives me crazy.
It drives us all crazy, Andy. Is there anything else you want to say about this episode?
The only other thing I'll say about it is that last interaction between Riker and Picard.
Yeah.
He says, I wonder if one doesn't have to have age and wisdom to appreciate that to Picard.
Mm-hmm.
And he's basically telling him, you know, I appreciate your grace, Captain.
The way you carry yourself.
And
Picard,
not realizing what he's doing to him, leans forward in a flirtatious way and goes, I hope not, number one.
Ooh.
That's all I got.
All right. Well, Andy, it's time for what... I guess we still have to say that there was a most valuable crew member here.
Don't we rank it first?
I don't know the order in which we do our own show.
I think we rank it first.
Very well, then. I would be happy to rank it.
The Andes. Or some other method of ranking. We're working on it.
The Andes. What do you say?
Oh, Andy, I give this a total of 1 out of 10 Andes.
I gotta give it a 1-2. The only thing is, let me just muse on this for a second.
Please.
I wish I could remember what I gave Code of Honor. You could probably pull up that thing.
I could. I'm sure we gave it 2, 2.5 around there.
I guess, but Code of Honor, for all its racism, at least there was some interesting stuff happening.
Like I have nothing in this episode where I'm like, this was really fun part.
Right.
Nothing.
Yeah, like the one Picard moment, but that's like not enough to give you a half.
That's a line.
Yeah, and the rest of it doesn't make sense, and the makeup's terrible, and it's just it doesn't hold together, and it's boring.
Yeah.
One for Secunda two.
There we go. We agree. 2 out of 2 hosts agree.
Yep.
This episode is a snossage berry. Okay, so now it's time for.
It's the MVC, yeah, the MVC. Only Matt and Andy know who it's gonna be. Will it be Data, Riker, Troy, or Dr. Crusher? Gotta fill the time with something, at least until season 3.
It seems pretty clear.
It's Captain Picard. He's the only person that does anything in this episode.
Agreed. Certainly not Beverly. Interesting, Wesley isn't in this.
He is not in the episode.
I wonder what happens, what their contracts were like, if they just were like, nah, well, we don't have anything for him to do, so we're not going to put him in the episode. Because usually,
if you're
going to pay someone, you will find something for them to do.
He was supposed to be in the episode, giving a tour to 14-year-old Admiral at the end of the episode. to the 14-year-old admiral who didn't know how to be in Starfleet.
Because he didn't remember.
Yeah. So,
it's
narrowly avoided being in the episode.
That is absurd.
I can't stress. We're in for a rough patch. This is a rough stretch of the season.
Right. Oh, we're in for worse?
We're in for...
I thought we had righted the ship.
This is a rough stretch of the season.
I thought it was going to get better from here.
No, there's some duds.
Oh, my God.
There's some duds.
Oh, my God, Matt. What have you gotten me into? Jesus. I was finally when we hit Data Lore and one...
Yeah.
100 yeah. Whatever.
Yep.
I was like, oh, okay. Okay. Here we are. Okay. It's getting a rough patch. Oh, Jesus.
Yep. So that is too short a season, everybody. Too short a season. Not good.
Captain, we are being hailed.
Being hailed.
Hailing frequencies are open, everybody.
Thank you, cheese.
We've got some emails here.
Okay. So these are about 11001001.
A great episode that Andy and I both rated very highly.
We did. This is from Afergar. I don't. I don't know if he wanted his name said, but whatever. Fun fact: he has a series of little points. I've kind of weeded through them. The actor who played The actor who played Argyle started a letter writing campaign to be made a permanent cast member, which pissed off the producers. Hence, no more Argyle.
Aww.
I love that behind the scenes. I'm not being used enough.
Aww.
I mean, what about Mike? What about Argyle? Argyle's got an interesting character.
That makes me sad. That makes me really sad for Argyle.
Tread carefully with your showrunners, my friend.
<That's> wise words to live by, everybody.
That is makes me laugh so much. Okay, here are some other little tidbits that he writes us. Same star base as Star Trek III, but the D fills the same space as the OGE. We already commented on that.
We did, yeah.
Coming through the door. I think you might have written this before the episode. Think the Binars look similar to the, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing this correctly, Talosians, but they were from the cage in the pilot for the original series. The big headed creatures that create illusions in your brain. So look it up. They do look the same, although they're smaller and more feminine because they were all played by women and they have weird ways of talking to each other in digitized voices. He asked, wouldn't Picard know who oversaw the ship's construction? Picard did seem surprised by
good point.
All this talk of Parisi squares and not a glimpse of the game. He puts a sigh ever.
You see Parisi squares. Not in this episode.
Oh, not in this episode. Oh, okay. You're proven wrong. Interestingly, as a side issue, when I was at WonderCon, I was lucky enough to have a meal with many of the writers of Battlestar Galactica,
mm-hmm.
And directors. Thanks to Mark Altman was hosting who wrote the 50-year mission, and Edward Gross wrote the 50-year mission, and they invited my friend, and my friend invited me because I'm not connected to the important
world.
People. No, so anyway, in any case, one of the writers told me that, and I don't remember the name of the game. That they played on Battlestar Galactica, where they would it was sort of like a battle basketball thing, but they had pitched to Glenn and Larson, hey, how about we do an anti-gravity version of basketball where people are bouncing off the ceilings and whatever, and basically Glenn and Larson was like, yeah, we can't do that.
Can't afford that. What are you, crazy?
So it's probably that's why Parisi squares didn't show up in this one. Bill Riker keeps calling them, or Will Riker, it changes a little bit, keeps calling them gentlemen, the Binars gentlemen, despite having been told that they are genderless. Not cool, bro. True. Okay. This is, I think you will find this interesting as a musician yourself, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
So you remember, well, I think she, Emily McMillan explains all this. The password was Minuet, she says. Hi, Matt and Andy. I'm currently listening to your episode. And after the revelation I just had, I was compelled to pause and write immediately. I did agree with Matt when he pointed out that the password that Bynars put in should have been Minuet. I also thought that Minuet was kind of a weird name for a holodeck girl. But you guys, it's because the password was actually Minuet. Minuet form in music is also known as binary form. The structure of a song in minuet form would be AABB, which corresponds with the first four digits of the password, 1100. The second part of the password comes from the chord changes in minuet form.
Whoa.
In a major key, the transition from the A section to the B section goes... I don't understand any of this because I'm not a musician. As of yet, the tonic to the fifth, and then the transition from the B section back to the A section is the fifth to the tonic, or IVVI, a.k.a. 1001. This is how you get the password. Considering how Riker is supposed to be a musician, it seems odd he wouldn't think of this.
No one would think of this except you. This is amazing.
This might have also been informed what the binars as to what to call Minuet and what the password should be. At the very least, Picard should have figured it out because he's supposed to be really into classical music. Although that seems like, you know, he doesn't necessarily know music theory. And then she says, then again, trying to explain all that musical theory to a large audience might have seemed too taxing for the writers. Mm-hmm. But I don't like if you that's genius. If that is the truth, that is genius, and it should have been called out in a line of dialogue at least.
But I mean, I've looked that up, and I've not seen that anywhere. I think that's her theory, which fits perfectly. I don't think the writers intended that.
No. If she, they called her Minuet, and that's really the math of a minuet? Well, anyway.
Yeah, I don't think they were thinking that well. I mean, it's a great episode. If they were, fucking kudos.
They must have been, right? Anyway,
I don't know.
Now I'm really, we should make a list of things we want to ask writers when we meet them. Because although probably if you say, hey, did you come up with this genius thing? They'll go, yes. Anyway, brilliant theory, Emily. I hope that's accurate. If anybody feels like it's not accurate, please let us know. Paul Cole says, hey, Matt and Andy, just listened to the Bynar episode, a favorite of mine. And I too wonder how they came up with the name of Bynus and a lot of the names in the other Star Trek shows. It seems unlikely because I was asking, is that the Universal Translator?
Mm-hmm.
It seems really unlikely that an alien race would name their planet after something else. Or does the Universal Translator map the real names to the Federation name? Seems odd. And then he had a couple of examples. Althos 4, homeworld of the Bzit cat species.
Mm-hmm.
New Halana, homeworld of the Halanan species. And Tagus 3, homeworld of the secretive Tiguan species. I'm sorry if I'm ruining all those.
You know what's funny is I just got this text from Joe.
I thought the password would be Minuet as well. Huh. Interesting.
He's listening to it now.
What are?
No. Like last week's podcast.
Oh,
he happens to be listening as we just talked about it.
It's perfect. It's almost like a call-in.
It's amazing.
Thanks
for calling in, Jeff.
This is the last thought that has occurred to me before. Oh, and Earth being sector 0.0.1 seems really arrogant, which I agree.
Well, it's the center of the Federation, so 0.0.1.
Yeah. Adam Simon. Hi, Matt. Hi, Andy. Matt, do you describe to the often mentioned fan theory that the binars messing with the Enterprise computer is what led to so many holodeck and computer issues later in the series, e.g. Moriarty, the unsolvable mystery for Sherlock, Data?
It certainly makes sense, but it does not explain away all the holodeck problems that happen on the Intrepid-class vessel Voyager.
Hmm. Maybe the binars paid a visit to them, too.
Mm, interesting.
Dear Matt, this is from Zachary Haythorne. Thanks to the podcast. After seeing Riker play a little bone in last week's episode, I thought you might
bone
like
for me
to hear a little more. Here is a song off of Fish's 1994 album, Hoist. The track is called Riker's Mailbox. Oh, my God. And features Jonathan Frakes on bone. And here it is, folks.
People ask me all the time, Why Do You Like Fish? The song doesn't illustrate why, but it's their sense of humor.
Is all their music like that?
No.
Okay. Stuart Gray, that's amazing, by the way. Thank you, Zachary. Stuart Gray writes, just wanted a message, say I'm really enjoying the podcast, and being from Scotland, to let you know that you have gone international. Critical analysis, very refreshing compared to the other fanboy podcasts. Keep up the good work. Oh, and in the UK, this was an issue we raised last week. We pronounce data as data, D-A-Y. We heard that from a lot of people on the internet, hence Patrick Stewart pronouncing it that way. Mainly, I was just excited that we have people in Scotland.
Well, now it's in the ethos of how Americans pronounce it. So congratulations, Patrick Stewart.
That's true.
On getting the Queen's English back into the Queen's colonies.
Josh Snow from the UK writes us from London. And yes, the English do, in fact, pronounce it data in the same manner as JLP. As we did invent it, you'd assume our way was correct. Although I did wonder, I guess data existed as just information before it was computer related.
I mean, listen, we should pronounce Jaguar Jaguar. We should say Z instead of Z. There's a lot of things that we don't do.
You know, you're
we're just a different, you know, it's like in the United States, I call carbonated beverage a soda. Someone from Chicago might call it a pop.
Do they still call it a pop?
Yeah, Midwest, it's pop.
Interesting. It's kind of the stubbornness of Americans.
Actually, in Boston, cola, we heard a lot. The word cola. But it's, you know, colloquialisms.
He also says, to shed light on the uncertainty about whether Phil Collins performed as lead before Peter Gabriel left Genesis, he was the lead vocalist on More Fool Me from the album Selling England by the Pound.
Mm.
Matt, would you say, I would guess the answer to this is yes, based on James Bonding, would you say that you are an Anglophile?
Probably, yeah.
Seems right. Pete Kramer.
Is that an Andy's theory? What's happening?
Nope, not a theory. Just a question.
Yeah.
And people were prodding about James Bonding info. What's the
coming soon?
Coming soon.
Coming soon.
Can't get more specific, folks.
Was on the phone with Matt this past week.
Did everything I could.
And next week, we might be firing up the Aston Martin.
Nice. Everything about Star Trek does seem to confirm that you set a time. Oh, this is regarding the self-destruct.
Mm-hmm.
That you set a time, you need the current commander. Confirm that to set a time, you need the current commander and two other high-ranking Starfleet officers to input a specific time. This was demonstrated in the original Star series episode, Let That Be Your Last Battlefield.
Yep, and Star Trek III.
However, crew members, oddly enough, do not need to be senior officers. In Star Trek III, it was Kirk, Scotty, and Chekhov that activated the self-destruct. Chekhov.
Chekhov's a senior officer at that point. He's a commander.
That's valid.
Although he was on the Reliant right before that, so he's not an officer on board the Enterprise. But he is a senior officer in Starfleet. So, then, Worf being able to do it on the Enterprise E makes sense.
Which is my theory was, or what I said.
Yeah, thanks.
In that film, it's likely that Chekhov was still officially the first officer of the Reliant, not actually current officer assigned to the Enterprise crew.
That's what I just said.
Right. I just wanted to give this guy credit that he had thought the same thing.
Well, I mean, we're having a conversation, me and that guy, and we're thinking the same things.
Very good. And I believe that's it. And therefore...
Frequency's closed, sir.
Just stuck with Chris Clements.
That's a... Recorder down. Guys, did you hear that happen?
Anything?
I don't know. It's still going.
Gesticulating.
The Zoom H6N, everybody. The Zoom H6N. Still recording the podcast after I dropped it on the floor.
Somebody was hilariously saying they were a beginning podcaster and asking you for advice on... on how to do it. Although I don't know that certainly from my side, this podcast is exemplary of how to set up your podcast.
I'll take that as a not a compliment, Andy.
Well, I think it's me. I don't think it's you.
I have a track record that speaks for itself.
That's true.
I have many popular podcasts.
That's true.
If I chose to make a living playing Parisi Squares, which, by the way, I was inceptioned into thinking I've seen Parisi Squares. It's never appeared on.
Oh.
I was inceptioned into thinking it because it comes up a lot. And I was just watching Future Imperfect, where Riker's son, quote-unquote son, plays Parisi Squares at the age of 12.
You know what that means just happened?
Time for a retrospective. Truth is our objective. It's a prime corrective, because Matt Andy got it wrong.
There you go.
There you go.
I imagined it. I honestly was inceptioned into thinking I've seen Parisi Squares.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to say goodbye to all of our friends and family who are listening to the show. I'm going to say, if you'd like to email us, you can do that. The email, of course, Andy knows.
sttnc@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. And we'll also say we now have, as per Matt's request, a Google voicemail up and running.
Oh, my God. We buried the fucking lead.
I'm sorry.
Did we have a voicemail?
We have a voicemail.
You fucking moron.
I'm sorry. I closed hailing frequencies. Here, we can do...
They don't need to be reopened.
No, we don't have to reopen them, but we can do this.
Captain, incoming message. Incoming message.
Don't have often have a reason to do that. Here we go.
Yo, hey, hello, what's going on? Andy, you're doing a great job. Keep up the good work. Myra, you should be able to say guys whenever you want to say it. That's it. Thanks very much, guys.
That's a great voicemail.
That's a great first voicemail.
If you want to be like him and leave a voicemail, you can call us at a number that Andy knows.
Ladies and gentlemen, that number is 323-834-8754 or 3-aft-fit-ski.
3-aft-fit-ski. Okay.
I just picked that one because it had aft in it. Everything else didn't fit anything
okay.
we could use.
Call us 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Just go straight to voicemail. You're not going to be bothering anybody. We'll hear them when we're awake. So please call. Let's say it's 3 o'clock in the morning and you're watching Star Trek 4 and you're like, you know what I just noticed about Star Trek 4? You can just call up our number and tell us what you noticed.
That's right. And it works internationally, as I understand it.
Thanks, Google Voice.
At Twitter, we're at Star Trek TNC. Same thing on Instagram, at Star Trek TNC. We're now up and running. And I'm at Secunda on Twitter and at Andrew Secunda on Instagram. Soon to be at Secunda, I think.
Yeah, you keep holding on hope. I am at Matt Myra everywhere, MattMira. Thank you all for coming on a journey with us.
He's looking for the... It's just me. I'm going to replicate a grilled cheese. This is going to be nice. Let's see. What should I put on? Maybe some prosciutto? Maybe... Oh, I didn't get a chance to...
That's the replicator
now. Oh, it is. Oh, okay.
God, he ruined it, guys.
Wait a minute. How are you back down here? You're already beamed out.
I gotta go.
Disengage.